This is KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. The opinions and views expressed in this program do not reflect those of KUCI, its management, or the UC Board of Regents. You can access shows live or as podcasts by going online to kuci.org. This is the In the Garden show produced by the UC Master Gardeners of Orange County. This is Ann Liu, your host for this hour. This show's topic is summertime roses, and I am very pleased to have as my guest, Gail Rose Lamb. Hello, Gail.
Hi, Ann.
Gail is a UC Master Gardener, as well as an American Rose Society consulting rosarian. Also, she is a California certificated nursery professional. She has a massive wealth of information to share with us. We're going to be talking about irrigation, watering, soil and fertilizer, pruning, pests in the garden, as well as nutrient deficiencies. Gail, watering roses, let's begin with that. How often do I need to water my roses in the summertime?
That's a very good question, because most people think that when the weather is hot and when the weather is dry like this, that they should go out and water their roses every day. But that's a misconception. It really should be a deep soaking, a deep watering, and that could be overhead watering, flood irrigation, or it could be drip irrigation. But when you water very deeply, water a lot all at once, yet very infrequently. So you could get away with once a week or once every 2 weeks if it's a very deep soaking.
Is it because the roots of the roses are so deep?
The roots will go down deep if they are deeply watered. If you shallowly water them every day a little bit, they're going to start being shallow rooted. They're going to start coming up to the surface to get water instead of encouraging the roots to go down deep with a deep watering.
And when we water, can we preserve the water from the watering with mulch?
Yes, if you mulch your roses in the summertime, that will keep the moisture into the soil a lot longer. It will also keep the weeds down. It will make the garden bed look great. It will enrich the soil.
What is the best mulch to use?
I would use a compost. Lately I've been using a horse compost, and I would also use something that's commercially available called a rose planting mix. Not rose potting soil, rose planting mix. I would use that without the vermiculite, but that would be a good mulch too.
And what makes that planting mix different from regular planting mix?
It is formulated for roses. Roses like slightly acidic on the neutral, they're neutral on the pH scale, but they like slightly acidic. And that rose planting mix is formulated just for roses.
Now let's go back to how often we should water. You said to water less frequently, but water very, very deeply. What happens to the plant? What stress does it? How does it show stress if it's not getting enough water?
If the rose is getting too hot and it's not getting enough water, you'll start to see the leaves start turning brown on the tips. But I was going to mention that the drought stress leads to defoliation. You can start seeing the leaves falling off, if not after they start burning. And also when the leaves fall off, then you get burning of the canes, sunburning on your canes. That's, you know, a very stressful time for the roses, and so they need extra water.
Now, for our listeners out there, how would a sunburned cane look like?
It looks a dark brown at first, like a scab almost, or a streak on the green cane. You would definitely notice the dark. It almost looks like it would be like if we had a scab or a scar.
I see. So it's better if the canes are a healthy dark green?
Well, if they have leaves on them, you need leaves on your plant to protect the stems from getting sunburned. And the reason they would lose their leaves is if they were stressed out from drought.
I see.
Not enough water.
Now, what if a person overwaters their roses? How would the plant, what signs would the plant show?
It would probably start getting yellow leaves. It would get mineral deficiencies, and the leaves would change of their appearance. It could be yellowing. There could be green veins showing. You'll start to see that the rose looks like it's hungry, and the leaves get pale. And there might be rotting of the roots if it's overwatered too.
And that leads also to when we were talking about mulching just a few minutes ago. Mm. How close should the mulch be to the roots?
Oh, that's a good question. You don't want the mulch to be touching the stem at all, or the bud union. The bud union is where the rose is grafted onto the roots. You don't want that touching about 2 inches away from that, so that you don't rot the crown.
So maybe our listeners out there don't realize that most roses are grafted onto a rootstock.
And the modern roses, and yes, most of the modern ones are.
Can you tell me about what rootstock and why one rose, one variety would be grafted onto a rootstock? Why do
they
do that?
They do the grafting because sometimes the rose is beautiful on top and gorgeous, but they have weak roots, and so they don't last very long. So what they'll do is they'll take a desirable rose that's doesn't have good roots, and they will graft that onto a strong rootstock. They usually use Dr. Huey as their rootstock, which is a red rose, but it's not known for its beauty. It's only known for tough roots, where the hybrid tea or some of the other beautiful roses are only known for beauty and fragrance. They're not known at all for having a strong root system.
Different roses have their strengths in different areas, one for flowering, one for their rootstock, and hybridizers make the best of it by combining what would make a good rose.
And they still have growers that use their own roots. Some roses can be all right with their roots, and so they do sell roses on your own root. That's what they call them, on their own roots.
On their own root. Mm-hmm. How about percent? Are most roses...
In the nurseries, yes, they're grafted.
Most are grafted. Mm-hmm. And our listeners out there can identify that bud union where the graft is, mm-hmm, and be aware not to cover it with mulch. Now, if drainage is a problem, I know choosing a good spot to have a rose, if drainage is a problem, what are some options?
Well, the options would be to put the roses in a raised bed. You might want to think about raising them up into pots. Some people can't have their roses in the ground, and they naturally have to have them in pots. Like if you live in an apartment or a condo, that would be a raised bed too. But you don't have to build a specific raised bed. You can always just put them in pots.
A little bit more about mulching. How deep should the mulch be?
I would say 2 to 3 inches, but you know, none of us really get all the way up to the 3 inches, so just getting it to 2 would be great.
2 inches at least.
Sometimes I see people, they just scatter a little scattering, and they think that that is mulching, but that's not enough. It has to be quite thick to discourage weeds and keep the soil moisture in.
Gail, I've known you a long time, and I remember I was taking care of my church roses, and people were so concerned with the long drought, and I was thinking of removing the roses, and you were telling me that roses can deal with drought.
Yes, you just have to give them a little help. I would cut them back so they don't need so much water. You can even take off the leaves. If it's an emergency, I take off all the flowers, take off the height, take off some leaves. I would water deeply, but infrequently, like we talked about earlier, because sometimes people think, oh, this rose needs a lot of water because I'm watering every day. That's a lot of water to waste. It never gets deep enough. You can never stand there long enough to get a deep soaking, and you're only watering about it, maybe an inch down, which evaporates into the sky. So you are wasting water, and the rose is never getting any. So I always recommend deep soaking, flooding, but infrequently, and that mulch keeps it in there from evaporating as well.
Deep soak and flooding.
You can use overhead irrigation, but I like the flooding method personally.
I used that method last year when the drought was really bad. This year I have been watering more often, and the roses have bounced back. They didn't have any problem recovering from that.
Good.
Now, shall we move on to weeding?
Sure. When you have the mulch down, it makes the weeds pull out easier, and it discourages them from even coming at all.
Now, I like to weed real well where my roses are before I fertilize them. And then this way I can fertilize them and then mulch on top, mm-hmm. so I'm not fertilizing mm-hmm. the mulch.
Right.
Is that a good idea?
That's great. It covers the fertilizer, so it stays put when you water, too.
And there'll be less weeds.
And then birds don't get into the fertilizer. And yes, there's less weeds on top.
Now, some people might think that they need to buy an herbicide.
Oh, for weeding?
Yes.
The herbicide?
What do you suggest?
Well, I suggest the pre-emergence. Those are the herbicides that are granular form, and they discourage weed seeds from germinating at all. And that will not hurt your rose because your rose is not a seed. It's already up and established. But this is where the caution comes. I do not recommend post-emergent. Those herbicides are the glyphosate fertilizers or herbicides, and those are very, very harmful to the rose. Roses are very sensitive to those.
Do the labels say pre-emergent and post-emergent?
It will if you read the fine print, and also if you read the ingredients, no matter what the label says as the brand name, you have to read the ingredients, that it'll say glyphosate.
I see.
And that's what roses almost cannot even get. They cannot recover from that. I have had them recover after a year maybe, but it's very hard.
Probably when we talk about IPM, integrated pest management, the mm-hmm. least toxic mm-hmm. to plants.
Right. You would just hand pull.
Hand pull is the first thing.
After that, after you hand pull, then I would put the pre-emergent down to keep any weed seeds that may have already hit the ground from germinating. But there's no need to use the glyphosate. Actually, sometimes you don't use it, but sometimes your neighbors do, and the drift is what is getting to the roses. The air drifts it over if there's any breeze at all, and you don't even know it's happening because you're not home when the neighbor's gardener comes and starts spraying the cracks. It can come from hundreds of yards away.
I think I would prefer doing the least toxic, which would be to just pull the weeds.
Right.
And if they become a real problem, consider some kind of herbicide. But if it's not a big problem,
the pre-emergent would be fine, except that, if the birds can maybe get down and start pecking at the pre-emergent. So I don't like that very much. But,
hand pulling, mulch.
You need to pull the roses mm-hmm. before they set seed. Because if all of a sudden the weeds get too big, they have seed and they drop their seed on the mulch, that's going to germinate. So always pick your weeds when they're small.
Yes.
Before they set seed.
Before they mm-hmm. set seed. Now, we mentioned fertilize a little bit. Maybe we should first review what the NPK means.
Oh, okay. For those who don't know, the NPK, N stands for nitrogen, the P, the middle number, the middle letter stands for phosphorus, and the K stands for potassium.
And these are the three numbers that you see on bags or containers mm-hmm. of fertilizer. NPK are the three numbers. They're hyphenated. Gail, tell me what the N does for the plant.
The nitrogen, that is good for your leaves. It makes your leaves green. That is what you need for vegetation, vegetative growth.
And the P, the phosphorus?
The middle number, that is the letter that you need to have a little bit higher if you have beautiful flowers like roses, or you want to develop berries or seeds. And also the middle number or the middle letter is good for roots.
I see.
But mostly it's for production of flowers, seeds, fruit.
So that's an important number mm-hmm. of the three numbers.
For roses, that's an
yes.
important number.
And the third number, K.
That is
potassium?
For potassium, and that enables...
For disease resistance?
Yes, disease resistance, too. And a little bit of roots, I believe.
And that affects the size of the bloom, right?
The size and quality.
And the quality mm-hmm. of the bloom. Now, when I apply the fertilizer, the roots are close to the surface, and I don't want to scratch it into the soil too deeply, right?
Right. The roots are a little bit sensitive. You want to be careful of the roots. So I don't really scratch it. And that's why I like to put the mulch on top of the fertilizer, so I don't have to rub it in. And the mulch keeps it down. Did you want to talk about some of the pests that might come in the summertime?
Do you want to do pests or pruning next?
Oh, well, we could do slight pruning. In summertime, there's not much pruning to do. It's only taking the dead flowers off, which they call deadheading. And you would only take a small amount of the green stem. You don't have to go way back like in the wintertime. Just what you would hold in your hand to make a bouquet. That's about the size of the cutting you would make.
I like to prune out stems that are growing toward the center, so there's some air circulation.
That's in the winter. That's like in the wintertime mostly, but you can prune as you go, I call it. And what that is pruning with an eye to next winter. You may have to come back and do quite a bit of pruning out, but if you kind of prune as you go during the summer, you're looking forward to a little easier prune in winter, which means you take out things from the center, dead twigs, and I go far back. I don't want a rose that's too tall, so I try to get it back a little bit more than most people.
Can you tell me a little bit about the five leaf?
Oh, everybody always asks that. They ask, why do I have to cut back to a five leaf, or what does that mean? I don't like to use the five leaf term. I like to tell people the reason they say that is because they want you to cut back to a thicker stem, and the five leaves are in an area that has a thicker stem. And the reason for that is because any rose that comes off of that stem is going to have a stem smaller than that, the width, the diameter of that stem. So if you cut to a thin stem with a three leaf and there's only a thin stem, the next rose coming off of that is going to have an even smaller, thinner stem, which won't even hold a rose head up. So you want to go back down to a thicker diameter stem, which is usually at the five leaf, and that will support the next rose coming out of it.
So it's key just to remember pencil diameter,
that's a
right?
That's a good way, yeah, and even thicker.
Because if you don't, the rose might be too heavy.
Yeah, and then the next stem coming out won't be a diameter thick enough to hold that rose. It'll be smaller than a pencil, the next stem coming out of it.
Right. So.
And you want to prune to the outward facing. To give it the vase shape that you were talking about with the air in the middle, always go to the outward facing. It's not going to kill anything or hurt anything if you don't go to the outward facing, but it'll help the shape of the rose.
Now, outward facing, can you explain that to the listener?
Those are the growth buds that grow up along the stem. They're alternating. They'll be on the left and they'll be on the right, growing all the way up. You'll see the little swelling of the buds, mm-hmm. little swelling of the area. It's not smooth there. It's like a little indentation.
So we want the one that faces
outward,
outside of the
right. And what I mean by vase shape is that all the branches will now be growing from the outward facing, instead of nothing will be growing from the buds that are growing inward. In fact, if you see a little bit of growth starting to come out from those, I just take my thumb and I rub it off.
Oh, good idea.
Yeah. So,
how about suckers?
Oh, that's a good question.
Let's talk about
a lot of
what they
are.
A lot of
people don't know where the suckers are, but those are stems that are growing from below the graft, and then we consider that the root. They're growing from the root. But if you can't see that it's growing from the root, always look to see where that bud union is. The graft, that bulging graft at the bottom. We don't want anything that's below that to grow. And you would twist off that sucker before it gets big, rather than cut, because every time you cut, you're encouraging new growth.
And twisting it breaks that growth cell.
Right, but sometimes you can't always twist it, so you'll have to cut it.
I know, sometimes my hands are just not strong enough.
Don't feel bad if you have to cut it. It's better than letting it go to sucker, because if you have too many suckers, it will just kills the rose and you'll have nothing left but the suckers. And they'll be all red roses, the red single roses that you did not buy.
Before we leave pruning, we just want to remind the listeners why good pruning helps the plant.
Well, in January when you do the hard pruning, is that what you're talking about?
No, the summer pruning.
Summer pruning, well, that just keeps the shape going so that it's easier for you to prune in winter. But you don't have to do prune as you go. But with an eye towards winter pruning, you can just cut off the dead flowers on top if that's all you have time for.
Now, I read somewhere that if let's say, come the end of the summer, like in September, when it's getting closer to a dormant period. Mm. Here in Southern California, the weather is always warm. The roses don't know when to stop blooming.
And you have to put them to bed.
Tell me about late summer. We're talking about summertime roses.
I like doing it in late summer because usually we get rust on some of the roses. Now, for rust, there are things you can spray, but I usually use tolerance because it's usually late in the season. You're almost about to prune anyways, do your winter pruning, so you might as well just not spray anything and just do a really hard pruning then. Anytime you do a complete pruning, whether you take off all the leaves and you go back to five strong canes, that puts the rose in dormancy, no matter what time of the year it is. If you want to move it, whatever, it puts the rose in dormancy, it goes to sleep. But it also is a good time to clean up that rust.
And helping it to go to sleep, what I've done, tell me if I'm correct, I just pluck off the petals from the rose rather than prune the roses, rather than deadhead. I just take off the petals, and it signals the plant not to have to produce as many roses.
No, you're leaving the rose hip then.
Is that bad?
That's taking energy away from, it's developing the rose hip with, actually that's where vitamin C comes from, is in that rose hip. It's actually putting all of its energy into forming that rose hip. And you want to cut that off to have a longer bloom season. If you don't want any more roses,
right? That's
what
I mean.
And you're done. You're ready.
Yes.
Then you can just leave it on. But if you cut it back, and cut them all off and take off all the leaves, that puts the whole thing in dormancy right then and there, that afternoon.
And that's what we will be doing in which month?
November through March, actually. I did forget to mention something about fertilizing. In pots is different than fertilizing roses that are planted in the ground. The roses in pots are going to need more frequent fertilization because every time you water, you're rinsing out all the fertilizer, all the food from the rose, where in the ground it's not getting rinsed out. So if you're growing roses in pots, and that needs to be fertilized for both, every time that you have a bloom cycle, after you have that cycle, you need to fertilize again. Every time you would like a repeat bloom, you need to fertilize afterward.
For a pot, is it better to use liquid fertilizer?
I don't think so. I think an organic granular fertilizer is just fine.
What is organic rose fertilizer? How do I find organic?
It says it on the box. When you go to the independent nurseries, they usually have it. Although now the big box stores are starting to carry some of the organic granular forms. You could, if you want a liquid, you could use seaweed too. But for roses, I would use an organic rose food formulated for roses. And they are available at most stores. You just have to read the label if it says organic.
I've noticed the numbers on organic are
lower.
Much lower.
That's because it's a slow, gentle feed. You don't want something with a high number that might possibly burn the roots.
Yes.
Especially in the heat of summer, you can easily burn.
Don't want to use a real high number.
I don't. Yeah, I'd rather feed the soil.
High, like meaning over 8, right?
Well, over 10.
Over 10? Yeah.
Sometimes you'll see some of the synthetic fertilizers.
I've seen 10, 10, 10.
For the phosphorus,
mm-hmm.
has a quite high number. That's scary.
And it can burn the roots.
It can burn the plant, yeah, the whole.
Don't want that. Mm-mm. Now, summer pests. Shall we begin that?
Oh, sure. The summer pests. Let's do that. One of the major pests that comes about in summer that I always have questions about is something is eating the leaves of people's roses, that skeletonizing the leaves. And so there's nothing left but the veins. And you'll see big holes in the leaves. It usually starts from the under leaves underneath the bush and works its way up. The lower leaves start with all these holes all over. Now that is probably going to be the sawfly larva. The sawfly larva, and the adults actually make holes. The larva of the sawfly makes the skeleton. They actually nibble it until it's a skeletonized leaf.
I've seen them on my roses. They're also rose slugs, aren't they?
A common name would be rose slug. But it's a sawfly larva, and you know what? It's not a caterpillar. It looks like a little green caterpillar, and they are easily washed off with water. But if you can't do that, you can use a I'll talk about that in a minute, about what to use. But I was going to say that they are not caterpillars. They're actually wasp larvae.
Mm.
So, you know, people use BT for caterpillar damage. The sawfly larva does not, it's not affected by BT. You
and
can't
so it
use
wouldn't
BT.
Kill it.
No, you you have to use this interesting, very interesting bacterial spray. It's called Spinosad or Spinosad.
Let's spell it.
It's S, capital S-P-I-N-O-S-A-D. And that is the ingredient in any of the product. They're actually organic. It's actually organic. In the independent nurseries, you'll have to read the label sometimes. It'll come as like a garden spray, it'll say, or something like that on the cover. But you have to look at the ingredient to see if it has Spinosad.
It's organic?
It's organic, unless they put a preservative in it. But what I think is very interesting is it's found. It was found by a soil scientist when he was on vacation in Jamaica, I think, and it was found in an abandoned rum factory. And isn't that funny?
Yes.
And it it works to kill a lot of the smaller insects. It affects their nervous system. It's a bacteria or a fungus that affects their central nervous system, and then that's it for them. It doesn't affect us, though.
It can affect bees, right?
Yes, I was going to tell you that. I never spray in the heat of the day, only at dusk. And at dusk, the bees are not active. I also, if I'm worried about the bees, I'll cut all the roses off. You know, because I care more about the bees than having a lot of iceberg roses. I will just cut all the iceberg rose heads off, and then the bees won't be coming to that plant for a while.
Ah.
But you know what? It's only harmful to the bees when the foliage is wet. As soon as the foliage dries, the spinosad will not harm the bees at all. So if you just do what's recommended on the very back of the package, you'll be doing good. People don't read the back of the package, but that is very important.
Yes, we need to follow the law.
Follow this instruction.
The label is the law. I would recommend trying the jet spray first.
The jet spray first, and then there's also you can use a soap. Now, the reason soaps, insecticidal soaps, work is because they have a little bit of oil in them. And you can use also oil products to suffocate. The oil is mixed with water, so it's not a straight oil, and it's just a thin, fine spray. And it will suffocate any small insect and their eggs. And it might do that for the caterpillars, the little sawfly larvae.
That's very organic as well.
But I still think that it's not enough, and I always go for the spinosad. I always recommend that to people because it's not going to be harmful to you. It's just a bacteria. And people are not retaining this information about
now,
the spinosad.
I get spinosad or spinosad?
Either way, spinosad.
Confused with neem oil.
Oh, neem oil is just the oil from a neem tree. The spinosad is a bacteria found in a Jamaican rum factory, so it gives it a little personality.
You can't
forget it now.
Okay, that's funny. Another insect, how about aphids?
Oh, aphids usually come with new growth, so if you feed too much nitrogen, you'll get a lot of green growth. All of a sudden, you'll get a lot of aphids, but that's generally in the spring. In the summertime, you don't see many aphids, but that's why we like to encourage beneficial insects.
And some beneficials are?
Lady beetles.
Spiders?
Spiders are a big one. People think they're scared of them in the garden, but they actually are good guys, especially in the summer.
Parasitic wasp.
Yes, and I like the syrphid flies.
Mm.
Those are good ones. And lace wings.
The green lace wings.
Mm-hmm.
Now, aphids can come in many colors.
Mm-hmm. Yes, they do have many kinds. They have an Asian lady beetle as well.
I see. And then there's the soldier beetle or the
leathery. Oh, I like the soldiers. Yeah.
Do you like them? One can look online for beneficial insects.
And at the Master Gardener's website, the information for the public, we do have pictures of them.
Yes. Let's talk about the Master Gardener website. Let me take a station break right now, and I will talk to you about the website as well. You are listening to the In the Garden show. This is 88.9 FM in Irvine and KUCI.org online. The opinions and views expressed in this program do not reflect those of KUCI, its management, or the UC Board of Regents. This show is produced by UC Master Gardeners of Orange County. I am Ann Liu, your Master Gardener host for the hour, and I am interviewing Gail Rose Lamb, a Master Gardener, an American Rose Society consulting rosarian, and a California certified nursery professional. We're talking about summertime roses. We're covering watering techniques, soil and fertilizer concerns for summertime roses, weed management, and we just left off on insects. And we have been talking about pests. In case you are just going on and missed the first half hour, you can listen to the whole show on our website. If you go online to mgorange.ucanr.edu. The UCANR stands for University of California Agriculture and Natural Resources. mgorange.ucanr.edu is our website. You can also go on that same website to send a question to our hotline Master Gardeners. Hotline, they appreciate pictures as well as questions pertinent to gardening this time of year. And we're going to be talking about some questions that are coming up on our hotline. Let's get back to our interview with Gail Rose Lamb, our UC Master Gardener. All right, we left off. We were talking about aphids that appear mostly in the spring. Let's talk about ants.
Ants. I was going to talk to you about that. And there are several other pests I wanted to talk about. The ants, that's very interesting. What happens is that you're seeing the ants around the rose bushes is because they are coming for the aphids. The aphids will eat your new growth on your... They'll suck the juices out of the new growth of your rose, and they will excrete a sticky honeydew. Now, the ants love that honeydew. They love it so much, Anne, that they actually farm the ants. In other words, they will protect them from beneficial insects. They'll protect them from being, you know, a predator to take them. They'll actually move the ants to another plant to keep them going, to keep them to eat other plants so that they can get the sticky honeydew, and they will protect them so that nothing happens to them because that's their food supply. So if you can get rid of the ants, then you'll get rid of the aphids because then the beneficials will come in and take the aphids. Or you can do a strong stream of water. But get rid of those ants because they're protecting them. And you can use Tanglefoot to wrap around, it's a sticky trap that you can rub around the rose to get that. Well, not on the actual rose. You put it on a piece of paper and you just wrap the stems with a Tanglefoot, it's called.
So Tanglefoot is a very sticky substance that you put on a paper that's wrapped around
Yes,
main...
you can do that on orange trees or citrus trees
I've heard of doing, mm-hmm.
And it's like you put a band of paper, then you smear that Tanglefoot around on the paper so they can't crawl past that.
I read once earthworm castings.
Yeah, that works really good. I don't know if there's any scientific proof on that with UC scientific proof, but I have heard many people tell me that, and I have used that myself, and it does work with a lot of different insects, especially the white fly. It works with that.
And those castings, do they need to be buried into the ground?
I don't. I just leave them on top as a mulch.
Oh, you toss them over the mulch.
Mm-hmm. And they work their way in. I also wanted to talk to you about spider mites real quickly. They usually appear because of dusty leaves, and that's why overhead watering is so good. The rose will appreciate overhead watering to refresh their leaves, but it also discourages spider mites by keeping the dust off. Indoor plants, the same thing, but especially roses.
Are these spider mites really spiders?
That's a good question. They're mites, honey. They're mites. They're just described in a common name as spider mites.
Right. So let's not get them mistaken.
They leave little webs around, and so people call them spider mites.
They're more mites.
They leave
than...
a webby, a dirty-looking leaf.
So roses like their leaves to be
cleaned.
I like to try to jet spray my roses.
You just do it early in the morning. Don't do it late at night because then you're going to leave a wet leaf overnight. But if you do it early in the morning or even midday, it'll have time to dry off. So don't be afraid of that. And then, Anne, I don't want to forget talking about the leaf cutter bees. These are sometimes you see the leaves of the rose leaf, and there's a perfectly round hole cut from the margin of the leaf. And you'll say, what kind of insect would make a perfectly round hole?
Mm.
Well, that is a leaf cutter bee, and they use those pieces of leaf to line their nests. Now, since they don't ingest the leaf, they're only using them to make a nest. There's no spray you can spray on the leaf to discourage them from disfiguring your leaf, because they don't eat it. They won't be killed by a pesticide. But you don't want to ever kill bees. Bees are our pollinators,
mm-hmm. and there's a shortage of them.
Right, and so I use tolerance for a lot of these kind of things. Their just season isn't very long to make their nests, and after they're done, then the holes stop coming. So I just kind of go with it for that, for the leafcutter bees anyway.
Now, are there any other insect pests that you want to talk about?
No, I talked about the rose slug. That's a big one. The rose slug is probably the most prevalent. The leafcutter bees, the spider mites, and we talked a little bit about aphids.
How about botrytis?
Botrytis, well, that would be the fungal, some of the fungal summer diseases, and we can get into that now. We usually start with powdery mildew, which that's that light gray powdery growth on the leaf, stems, shoots, and buds of the rose. And it's quite active in the dry, warm summer months. And I usually control that with any of the horticultural oils. You'll see that on the label as neem tree oil, or there'll be a product that says sunflower oil or safflower or even clove oil I've seen.
Hmm.
And it smells so good. Clove oil is my favorite because it smells
good like
while you're doing it. No, it just smells like Christmas cookies, like cloves and cinnamon. And anyways, I spray that oil, but never in the heat of day, because you know when you put oil on something and then the sun hits it, it's going to burn. It's going to burn those leaves. So I always do it about dusk. But there are many products. Now, there's a newer product that's called Green Cure. You might want to take note of that. And it's available it's available at the Orange County Farm Supply in Orange. It's a kind of a newish thing that rosarians are using. It's Green Cure, and it is a potassium bicarbonate formula. Now, that is supposed to be doing wonders for the powdery mildew. And I would also use it for black spot. Now, some people get black spot on their rose leaves, and it's highly identified just because they're exactly black spots on the tops of your leaves, usually found in the coastal rose gardens. So I would try spraying with that. You can keep your rose neat, keep it clean by raking up all the leaves that fall on the ground, removing the leaves that are on the bush that have black spots.
And sometimes just the way we
replace the mulch as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, you don't want to keep the rose leaves wet at the end of the day.
And sometimes the splash back from fungus that might be in the...
Yes, when you water or it rains, the fungus is in the fungal products, or not products, the fungal disease lands on the ground. It falls to the ground and on the mulch. And then the first time you water or it rains, the rain hits the mulch and it splashes back up to a very high it goes. In fact, the other day I felt it from 3 feet up high. I could still feel droplets. When I sprayed the ground, I could feel the moisture coming from up there, and it's hitting all the leaves on the undersides.
So splashback can cause a problem, and the only way to avoid it, if you have rust
or
fungus,
the black spot,
is to remove it from the mulch.
Well, first clean up the bush, take off all the affected leaves,
mm-hmm.
and rake them up and throw them. Oh, by the way, you throw them in the trash. You don't put them in the recycle bin, because that will just...
We don't want that to go into the next person's mulch.
Right. So you clean that all up. Then when everything's all clean, then you put fresh mulch on. You scrape away the old mulch and put fresh mulch down.
Now this rust, if you don't, not you, Gail, but if a person doesn't treat their rust by replacing the mulch and such, that rust can actually overwinter.
It overwinters. I was going to say for people who don't not experience that, rust are those small pustules of orange-colored growth under the leaves. And it comes from cool, moist weather, like near the coast. It usually comes late in the season. You can get rid of all the leaves, and you can get rid of all the mulch, but it sometimes hides in the little nodes on the stems, the little nodes that the buds are swelling from. It will hide in there over winter in there, so I spray with a copper spray.
And
you can find that at any of the independent nurseries, and you have to read the label and make sure it says copper.
Mm-hmm.
And I spray that, and that's also good for peach leaf curl.
I was wondering about that. Mm-hmm. Copper spray is
And also, previously, the spinosad, That's mm-hmm. what we use for citrus leaf miner. If you have distorted leaves on yes. your citrus or your lemon, that's probably you have citrus leaf miner, and the spinosad is used for that.
I see.
As well, if you want to spray it. However, you don't have to. It won't hurt if you don't spray. You can just tolerate the citrus leaf miner. It's not going to affect the health of your plant. It'll snap out of it.
I have a trap for it, too.
An organic trap, that would be good.
An organic trap for it.
Mm-hmm. And that's just like a sticky?
Yes, it's mm-hmm. that sticky one. It's okay. The Delta trap.
Okay.
So
we talked about black spot, rust, powdery mildew. And you can also use horticultural oil for the black spot or the powdery mildew as well.
And if this is too much information on the radio show, you might be driving out there and you can't write this down, you can go to a good nursery and tell them what the problem is, or bring a sample of the leaf and ask them what they would recommend. And it would probably ring a bell when they show you a bottle of spinosad and you say, oh, yes, I remember that word. That's or a copper spray. A good nursery person can lead you to the correct spray.
Did you want to talk about reputable
yes.
nurseries?
What does reputable nursery mean?
Certified. I'm a certified nursery professional, and so I can probably tell you what I feel like. There's really no definition that I could find, but for me, it means that a nursery is honest and reliable. They have an educated staff, and they offer plant education to their customers as well as their employees. They demonstrate integrity, and they value their employees and empower them rather than show mistrust or discourage them. They buy plants from growers that are disease-free, and they have reputable growers that are honest as well. And they sell plants that are zone-appropriate. They don't sell something from back east, from New York only, and just to make their profits big. They don't sell plants that are not from our zone. Those are responsible people. And they can be trusted to sell only high quality to the customers, and they want to see their customers successful. They give you the right variety, the right genus and species. You come in with a plant list, and they don't try to substitute with something that you didn't want because they think that maybe customers don't know. But a reputable nursery will give you what you've asked for without trying to substitute inferior product. They deal only with reputable growers, and they don't carry invasive species, or at least they tell you, they give you lists of invasive species. They're ethical, and their policies toward their customers and employees. They're shining examples to all. They hire knowledgeable staff, and some have earned horticultural degrees, or they are certified nursery professionals. They support employees to make sure they have classes on horticulture, or they'll even support them with the California Certified Nursery Professional Test. They'll support them through getting education that way. And most reputable nurseries, or some may and some may not, belong to the California Association of Nurseries and Garden Centers. And we call that for short, the CAG, CAN, we call it CANners.
Thank you. I had never known about what a certified, a California certified nursery professional was, and mm-hmm. knowing that code of ethics.
Well, that
and
is,
knowing
that
the standards
is a reputable nursery, but for a person to take the test, they have to study their study materials for nursery, retail nursery study guide, and they have to study up for that. There's a 3-part test. It is not an open book test. It is something you have to know. I think there's 100 true or false answers, and then there's a landscape design portion, and there's an identification portion of that, and all the botanical names have to be spelled correctly and matched with all the common names. And that's indoor plants and outdoor plants as well. So there's a lot to the test. The aim for that is so that a certified nursery professional can help the customer and help you with your plant selection and make it a wonderful experience for you.
We were talking about diseases, and we covered fungus and botrytis, which is caused by fungus. We didn't talk about nutrient deficiencies.
Okay.
And before we go into grades of roses, let's talk a little bit about that.
All right. Well, a nitrogen deficiencies are quite common. I would say iron deficiency for me is the most common, and that's when the leaf starts to turn yellow, but you can see the green veins all standing out still green, and the whole rest of the leaf is yellow. That's a sign right there that's an iron deficiency. But sometimes oxygen deficiency can look like that from overwatering. If you overwater, there's no oxygen in the soil, and so the leaves start to look like that a little bit as well. It's just a different intensity of the veinage. But there's calcium deficiencies and phosphorus deficiencies. There's I have a picture in my consulting rosarian manual of the heat stress and what that looks like. Heat stress has burned edges on the leaves.
Now, what if the roses, the leaves look mottled with yellow streaks?
Sometimes you'll get a rose that has a virus, and that means the rootstock had a virus. It was not a virus-tested rootstock, an inferior rootstock, and so your rose got a virus. And it's called rose mosaic virus, actually. And it doesn't, well, it's bad for an exhibitioner. If you are going to take your prize rose to the rose show and try to enter it for a prize, you might as well throw that rose away. But for the average homeowner, it's quite all right to have that rose mosaic. The leaves will have little mosaic lines in them, or netting, like a netting look. And it's quite all right. What the interesting thing about that netting coloring goes away in the heat of summer. And it's still there, but it's not contagious. It only is contagious if you try to put bud wood onto the roots, if you try to graft your own rose. But it doesn't spread to your other roses. For the average homeowner, it's just fine. In the summertime, it completely goes away and you can't even see it. It does only affects a little bit of production of roses. But if we're not going to enter our roses in a rose show, you don't have to take it and throw it away. Just tolerate it. But try to buy your roses from a more reputable nursery next time. So that you don't get the inferior virused roses.
Now, since you're talking about buying roses, people love roses. Roses are probably one of the most favorite flowers on this planet.
Oh, I think it's an American flower.
It's the America.
It's the flower of America is the rose.
It's the U.S. flower. Even William Shakespeare said, of all flowers, methinks a rose is best.
That's very simple and to the point, isn't it?
To the point. I remember seeing some roses at a beautiful rose exhibition at the Huntington Gardens.
Yes.
And up in Portland, the International Rose Test Garden.
That's beautiful.
So roses are very popular in this area, I'm sure our listeners have their favorite spot to see roses, especially during the summertime when they are at their best. Buying a rose, do we have some time to talk about someone who might have space in their garden for a rose? Is it okay to plant a rose at this time?
It is if you intend to water deeply and maybe water the hole first, and then also after you plant to water it deeply and then to mulch and take time every day to go check to make sure that the canes aren't drying out, or just make sure that the soil is not drying out in this heat that we're having, especially in over 90, and then when it's over 100, you probably need to deeply water almost every day if it's over 100.
And that's a general rule of thumb for our new plants.
That's for a new rose, yeah. Mm-hmm. Because once established, it gets a little tougher than that.
Maybe after the first year.
Maybe not.
Mm-hmm. Especially during the hot season.
Yeah. And then it'll be more drought tolerant. Roses have been around for a long time. Mm-hmm. Some of them grow without any care at all. The wild roses especially.
It's kind of fun shopping for roses. We want to find roses that are disease resistant. Mm-hmm. New ones
come. Well, you can look at the label and you can also look it up online to see. There's some roses that are regarded as, especially by the coast. You don't want to grow a hybrid tea by the coast. They always recommend a floribunda. It's got less petals and there's less chance of you getting fungal diseases and such. Where the hybrid teas, you would probably, if you were living more inland in the hotter areas, you could get by with the hybrid teas.
The floribunda rose looks like a bouquet.
Yes, there's many cluster. They call it cluster roses. If it's clustering on the end of one stem, you know you've got probably a
And it's so pretty. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of a lazy gardener. I don't want to have a lot of work where I have to keep on checking for these rose diseases. I like to have a rose that is very, very
easy to care
hardy,
for.
Easy to care for.
I do have some recommendations for Floribundas if you wanted them.
Let's go through the different categories and then your recommendations.
Oh, okay. Well, for the coast, I recommend the Floribundas. And for inland, more hybrid teas and grandifloras. Also, you know, the more inland you go, you can do the shrub rose and or the David Austin roses. That's an interesting category. It's my favorite category is shrubs. You have hybrid teas, floribundas, climbing roses. But the one called shrubs, it seems so innocuous, but it's actually, it has all the beautiful roses too. Those are the roses they don't know where to put in any other category. And they're generally the newer hybrids like the David Austin roses and the Romantica roses. Those are all considered shrubs, but they're my favorite. And you have to be more inland, because the more petals you have, the more chances you're going to have of the fungal diseases by the coast.
I see.
There are a few you can get away with.
It holds that moisture. Is that why?
I think that might be it. It's
the moisture in the petal.
It's hiding in all that cluster of petals. Yeah.
It's important.
But also mildew, too. It's the climate. It's the overcast mornings by the coast. Always overcast mornings are encouraging all this mildew.
Since roses are so sensitive to this moisture, it's really important to choose a spot that is sunny, right?
More than 6 hours of sun a day.
6 hours?
Mm-hmm. But if you're farther inland, you might want to give it a little bit of shade in the afternoon, especially those red roses. They like a little shade in the afternoon in the hottest inland areas. But 6 hours of morning sun or that time of the day is ideal in the hot summer.
And planting them away.
Or 6 hours or more. You could have eight hours or more.
They like the sun.
But at least 6 hours. They like the sun. People ask me all the time, can I grow any roses in shade? I'm saying no. You can't grow any roses in shade. Just give them more than 6 hours of sun.
I want to finish this. So when you're planting them, you got to make sure you got ample sun, 6 hours or so, good drainage in the soil, right?
Right.
And away from shrubs and trees.
Well, trees will shade them.
Mm-hmm.
But shrubs might crowd them so they don't get air circulation. And you want to plant your roses at least 3 feet apart, maybe even 4 feet apart to get ample air circulation. That keeps down the fungal diseases.
This is really good information.
Most people don't have that much room.
That's
right. You'll see them, a lot of them, 2 feet apart.
And during the summer, maybe you might notice out there that your rose is not doing well.
Pounding
it might
mildew.
Be.
Yeah. They come from the dry summer months and not good circulation.
It might be a time to consider maybe down the line in January you might want to move the rose or
get a new one.
Yeah,
that's more
one.
Disease resistant.
Did we finish the?
No, we didn't talk about the disease resist or the maybe my choices for certain types of roses, like the Floribundas. There's a new one to replace the Iceberg. The Iceberg has a lot of mildew, and people complain about that all the time. They're very popular, but they near the coast they always get. And Irvine is part of the coastal, too, a little bit, the more
depending
coastal
what
ones.
Part.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But they are always recommending now this new one called Ice Cap, and it's bred to be disease resistant, and it has the same look and shape and color as the Iceberg. It's called Ice Cap. So I would recommend that as one of the Floribundas. Everyone loves Julia Child. It's always blooming. It's a yellow rose, constantly in bloom, and I have heard nothing but good things about that one.
And it doesn't grow too high.
No, it's just perfect in every way. And then I love a Distant Drums. That's a good designer rose. The Distant Drum is a, I don't know how you would describe it. It's a muted pink and brownish. Very, very distinct, unique color. But it's beautiful in a vase, and it's always blooming as well. It has a nice flush of roses. I used to love to see Disneyland go through the nursery when people would buy Disneyland on a dark, dreary day. Disneyland just glows. It has the colors of Trix cereal. I love that, you know.
Very bright.
You know what
that
means.
It picks up your spirit.
It has like three colors. It kind of mutates into three different colors as it ages. Then another one I like is called Easy Does It. For pink, there's Sexy Rexy. And Our Lady of Guadalupe, and Carefree Beauty.
Oh,
those are all Floribundas.
Those are beautiful.
Did you have time to talk anything about the hybrid teas or any other roses?
We have 2 minutes.
Okay. Well, I only have 2 minutes worth of roses left.
All right, let's do that.
For the hybrid teas, I might recommend a Moonstone, which is a white, and that would be further inland. Olympiad is a wonderful red. Veterans Honor always wins awards at the rose shows. Gemini is a pink, then it always wins awards. I like Elena. Elena is a yellow rose, hybrid tea. Elle is a highly regarded pink rose. St. Patrick is a lime green and yellow. It's beautiful, always in bloom, has wonderful blooms. And Touch of Class is always a classic orange that always wins awards.
Those are beautiful.
Grandiflora, I pick a fame only, just fame. Mm-hmm. If you want the David Austin recommendation, I would say Abraham Darby or Evelyn. For a Romantica, who doesn't like the Yves Piaget? It looks just like a peony, and it smells wonderful. For a climbing rose, if you can only have one climbing rose, just get the Eden climbing rose. I might recommend Colette for a David Austin, or a white Eden even.
Those are great recommendations. If there were many that she named that you are interested in, you can ask for Gail Rose Lamb on the hotline, and the master gardeners will find out what she said and will be able to give you her recommendations. Again, our website is mgorange.ucanr.edu. We have come to the close of our show In the Garden. Thank you very much, Gail, for telling us so much about summertime roses. I can't believe how much territory we covered. We did site selection, rose selection, watering, fertilizer, mulching, pruning, weeds, insects, pests, and nutrient efficiencies. And on top of that, you gave me names of your favorite roses for recommendation. Thank you very much for coming on our show.
You're welcome.
If you would like to hear this podcast in whole, you can go on our website, mgorange.ucanr.edu, and look in our archives and see all the other podcasts that we have kept for your use and your happy listening. Thank you for listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine, the In the Garden Show. Tune in every week on Thursday, 8:30 to 9:30, for another green topic. Following this show is Home Plate. Stay tuned now to listen to our very own Galley Girl, Home Plate. Thank you. This is Ann Liu, your host for the hour.